Tasyam sapanca janyamai.
Tasyam sapanca janyamai.
Tasyam sapanca janyamai.
Tasyam sapanca janyamai.
Vishnumaya pabrinhida.
Vishnumaya pabrinhida.
Vishnumaya pabrinhida.
Vishnumaya pabrinhida.
Karyasva sangyan ayutam.
Karyasva sangyan ayutam.
Aryasva samyanayutam.
Aryasva samyanayutam.
Putranna janayat vibhu.
Putranna janayat vibhu.
Putranna janayat
vibhu.
Sri Supauvacha. Tasyam sapaccha janyavai.
Tasyam sapaccha janyavai.
Vishnumaya pabrinhida.
Vishnumaya pabrinhida.
Aryasva samyanayutam.
Aryasva samyanayutam.
Putrana janayat vibhu.
Putrana janayat vibhu.
Tasyam sapaccha janyavai.
Tasyam sapaccha janyavai.
Sukadeva Goswami said, Tasyam, in her, Saha, Prajapati Daksha, Panchajanyam, his wife named Panchajanyam. Why, indeed, Vishnumayo Pabrimhitaha, being made capable by the illusory energy of Lord Vishnu. Haryashva Sangyan, named the Haryashvas. Ayutam, 10,000. Putran, sons. Anjanaya, begot. Vibhu, being powerful. Translation. Sri Sukadeva Goswami continued, impelled by the illusory energy of Lord Krishna, Prajapati Daksha begot 10,000 sons in the womb of Panchajani, Ashikni. My dear king, these sons were called Haryashvas. I have a brief introduction to this chapter. This chapter relates how all the sons of Daksha were delivered from the clutches of the material energy by following the advice of Narada, who was therefore cursed by Daksha. Influenced by the external energy of Lord Vishnu, Prajapati Daksha begot 10,000 sons in the womb of his wife, Panchajani. These sons were all of the same character and mentality, were known as the Haryashvas. ordered by their father to create more and more population, the Hariyashas went west to the place where the river Sindhu, now Indus, meets the Arabian Sea. In those days, this was the site of a holy lake named Narayana Saras, where there were many saintly persons. The Hariyashas began practicing austerities, penances, and meditation, which are the engagements of highly exalted, renounced order of life. However, when Sri Narada Muni saw these boys engaged in such commendable austerities simply for material creation, he thought it better to release them from this tendency. Narada Muni described to the boys their ultimate goal of life and advised them not to become ordinary karmis to beget children. Thus, all the sons of Daksha became enlightened and left, never to return. Rajatipati Daksha, who was very sad at the loss of his sons, begot 1,000 more sons in the womb of his wife Panchajani and ordered them to increase progeny. These sons, who were named Shavalashvas, also engaged in worshipping Lord Vishnu to beget children, but Narada Muni convinced them to become mendicants and not beget children. Foiled twice in his attempts to increase population, Prajapati Daksha became most angry at Narada Muni and cursed him, saying that in the future he would not be able to stay anywhere. Since Narada Muni, being fully qualified, was fixed in tolerance, he accepted Daksha's curse. Srila Prabhupada Shishukuvacha Tasyam Sapanchajani Vara Vishnumaya Pabrindhidaha Hariyasvasam yanavutam kutram ajanayat vibhu. Śrīla Śukadeva Gosvāmī continued, impelled by the illusory energy of Lord Vishnu, Prajapati Daksha, he got 10,000 sons in the womb of Panchajani, Ashikmi. My dear king, these sons are called Hariyasvas. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Krishtaya Dutare Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Tinami Namaste Saraswati Devi Guravani Pracharani Nirvishya Shushunyavadi Paschatari Shatarini Vancha Kaupataru Vishcha Kripa Shindu Vyavacha Patitanam Pavane Diyo Vaishnave Diyo Namo Namo Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Vyadhara Shivasani Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. This is a very shocking and sad news which we received this morning about the departure of Bhakti Swarupa Madhava Goswami. But before talking about this, I would like to speak a little bit about the whole topic of the sixth canto, which is actually very appropriate in this occasion. Because the very topic of the sixth canto is the power of bhakti. The whole sixth canto is devoted to this very important understanding or concept in Gaudiya Vaishnava Siddhanta, that bhakti is not dependent on anything. That bhakti, being on the level of Lord Himself, being purely spiritual energy, is independent, causeless, and can act under any circumstances. The first story in the sixth canto, which we just finished reading in the course of reading Srimad Bhagavatam, is the story about Ajami, which beautifully illustrates this point. That bhakti does not depend on anything. That even sinful activities are not the impediment for bhakti. Even the shadow of bhakti, not real bhakti, just a real shadow of bhakti, mere shadow of bhakti can drive away all the impediments. In the case of Ajami, we know that the shadow of holy name, not the holy name itself, because when he was calling Vishnu, Vishnu, Narayan, Narayan, He didn't mean Vishnu. He meant his son. But because the composition of the syllables was the same as in the name of God, which is entirely, totally, completely, absolutely spiritual, this was enough to drive away all the impediments, including the most horrible impediment, which is hell. So this whole canto is about vijay, or triumph of bhakti. How can bhakti be victorious over all the material problems which are there? And we can see actually this departure of Bhakti Swarupa Damodara Goswami, although it is very sad news, but we can see a very auspicious indications in this departure. Bhakti Swarupa Damodara Goswami was one of the favorite disciples of His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, and Prabhupada was using him to show his disciples how to defeat scientists. Prabhupada was particularly very angry at the scientists, because scientists bewilder people. I'm a scientist myself by background. Scientists, they try to make an impression in the minds of people that the science figured everything out, and you know, there's few details left which is still to be known, and you should enjoy material life to the fullest possible extent. So actually, the scientists who are the main defenders of this materialistic way of life were viewed by Srila Prabhupada as the main target of his preaching against this bewilderment which is ruling over material world. And Bhakti Swarupa Damodara Goswami was himself a scientist by background, and Prabhupada used him as an example of a scientist, and he would force him to give the arguments on the side of scientists. And Prabhupada was always victorious. Prabhupada often said that I am an old man, but because I know bhakti, I know everything. It's a very, again, very powerful and very proud in one sense statement, because if you know bhakti, you know everything. You can defeat any scientist. And Bhakti Swarupa Damodara Goswami, following the order of his spiritual master, devoted his whole life to this topic of defeating the scientists, or rather bringing about the spiritual concept within the science, because the real scientists, they do understand that mere science in just a gross materialistic assumption cannot really explain everything in this world. That gross materialistic assumptions are being defeated by the science itself. We can see that more and more in the science, and cutting edge of the science, they're accepting spiritual or pseudo-spiritual principles, or introducing the spiritual principles in their conception. Like, for example, in the quantum mechanics, which is perhaps the most intriguing branch of the modern science, the understanding of consciousness is being introduced. And consciousness, by definition, is something entirely different from the matter. And this quantum physics or quantum mechanics is actually the proof that matter is influenced by the consciousness. That matter is secondary and consciousness is primarily force or primarily element in this creation. And basically, all the movements of the matter are in fact directed by the consciousness of an observer. That was the revolutionary concept of quantum physics. And his whole life, Bhakti Swarupa Damodara Goswami, he was fighting with these scientists. And he was victorious, following the footsteps of Srila Prabhupada. And he passed away in a very auspicious muhurta. This muhurta is called Abhijit Muhurta. The muhurta around midday and midnight is the strongest Muhurta in the world. We know that Lord Krishna was born in Abhijit Muhurta around midnight. And usually it is said that whoever is born around midday or around midnight becomes very powerful. And in the same way, if somebody is passing away in this auspicious time, midday or midnight, it means a very, very powerful departure. It means a powerful destination, because Abhijit basically means also victory. The Muhurta which brings about victory. So we can see in the example of Bhaktiswarupa Madhava Goswami how he passed away in this Abhijit Muhurta around midnight. And the day of Tithi on which he passed, or today, today's Tithi, Dashami Tithi, is Ramachandra Vijayotsava, the celebration of the victory of Lord Ramachandra over Ravana. And it's also interesting, the history behind this festival is also very interesting. Because on this day, it's not that on this day Ravana was killed. Ravana will be killed much later. But still, this particular tithi is called Ramachandra Vijayotsava. Why? Because on this day, Hanuman came back to Kishkindakanda, to Kishkinda from Lanka. And on this day, Hanuman just told Ramachandra, you know, I found Sita. Sita is in Lanka. And Sita was captured by Ravana. Of course, this was known already. So, when Lord Ramachandra just heard this news, it signified his victory. Everything else was just more or less technical detail. It was just more or less kind of ritual which has to be performed. For the Lord, his victory, of course, he is always victorious. He's victorious over everything because he's not dependent. He's not dependent on time, he's not dependent on material nature. But this, you know, this celebration is that when he heard this, Sita was already released and Ravana was already dead. All, everything else was just, you know, a little ritual which has to be performed to bring it into fruition. But ultimately, in this particular story we see, and Bhaktiswarupa Madhava Goswami again, he passed away on this day. And this day again is very auspicious because this is the day of appearance of Sripad Madhvacharya. Madhvacharya is another great acharya of our sampradaya who has been always victorious. He was born on this day of victory of Lord Ramachandra to again proclaim the victory of God over godlessness. Sripad Madhvacharya, his mission in life was to very strongly proclaim that God, and by definition, devotion to God. Because again, God and devotion to God are of the same nature. And when we talk about God, we naturally talk about bhakti or devotion to God. So Sripad Madhvacharya, his main mission in life was to proclaim this victory, this complete victory of bhakti over this material world. And in this way we can see that even though it's a sad news about Sripad Bhaktiswarupa Madhava Goswami, but we can also see very auspicious indications in his departure. And of course, this is very much connected with the whole topic of this particular chapter on the particular canto which we are reading, is that bhakti is not dependent on anything. It's not even dependent on the laws of material nature. It's not dependent even on the words of God. Talking about departure from this world of Bhaktiswarupa Madhava Goswami, we can also remember the verdict of Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna says that whoever remembers me at the time of death, he comes to me. Krishna formulates this very broad and non-sectarian concept of the final destination. Because sometimes people become doubtful or intrigued of what would be the final destination of the person. Krishna gives a very scientific explanation of this. He says that the final destination of a person basically reflects the nature of his consciousness, which he developed in the course of his life, and which is more or less manifesting himself at the last moment of this life. And he sees the certain image at that time, and he will be this image. But bhakti is not even dependent on this. Even though Krishna formulates this law, which is a general law, which is applicable to everyone, but in case of bhaktas, who are engaged in devotional service during this life, even this law doesn't work. So powerful is bhakti. In the life of Ramanujacharya, there was this story when Ramanujacharya expressed his doubt. And the doubt was what happened with somebody, with a devotee, who his whole life was engaged in devotional service, trying to serve the Lord, trying to chant the holy names. But somehow or other, by some chance, he would die unconscious. Or because of severe pain, he would not be able to remember the Lord. Or because of some other circumstances, he would not be able to pronounce his holy name. What happened with this person? And this particular doubt was expressed by Ramanujacharya in his question to Varadaraj, the deity of Lord Varadaraj, who is still served in one of the most holy cities in India, Kanchipuram. And Varadaraj gave the answer. When he was asked by Sripad Ramanujacharya about this particular incident, what will happen with somebody who by chance doesn't remember about the Lord at the time of death, if he was a devotee his whole life? Varadaraja said, don't worry, I will take care of this. This is not your problem. He said, no matter in which consciousness devotee dies, because death is a very dramatic experience. It's a very difficult experience for everyone. But the Lord promises to us, solemnly promises to us, that I will protect my devotee, I will protect consciousness of my devotee under any circumstances. Because this is the power of bhakti. The power of bhakti is such that the consciousness of a devotee is being protected by the Lord himself. By the power of bhakti. Varadaraj said that I will save this devotee no matter what. I will take him back. It doesn't matter. Sometimes people, they become little mental. Devotees become little mental, etc. Whether I am saved or not, this concept of salvation, of this Christian concept, I am saved or not. In Christianity, everything is simple, especially in the Protestant branch of Christianity. You just sign up for our sect and pay some dakshin every month and you're saved. You can be sure. Sometimes devotees, they develop this doubt. Am I saved or not? Yes, you are saved. And this whole sixth canto is about this. You are saved if you are a bhakta. Bhakti enough. Bhakti is so powerful. It doesn't matter, no circumstances can influence bhakti. We can see Arjanil is an example of this. Another story in the sixth canto is about Vritrasura. And Vritrasura is a good guy who is a demon. And despite being a demon, he is becoming victorious. His bhakti is more powerful than kind of mixed materialistic attitude of Lord Indra. So this is the topic of sixth canto, but at the same time, sixth canto gives us a very important warning. And this particular chapter is about this warning. Nothing can destroy bhakti. No material circumstances can destroy bhakti. No sinful activity can destroy bhakti. Bhakti can, conquer over any sinful activities, any amount of sinful activities. No problem. Even shadow of bhakti can do it. But there is one thing which one has to be careful about. And this particular chapter is exactly about this. This is offenses. Bhakti, being spiritual by nature, cannot be destroyed by anything material. As much as the Lord cannot be destroyed by anything material. But there is one thing which can destroy bhakti. Totally, completely, absolutely. This is offenses. And this is a huge topic. I mean, to give justice to this topic, I will have to speak for a long time. Or maybe tomorrow we can continue, because I think I can still stay. I don't know if I should touch it now or not. But the point here is that this story about Daksha cursing Narada Muni is in the contraposition with the story of Ajanil. In the story of Ajanil, we see somebody who is innocent, despite being sinful. This is a very essential and important concept, which is not there in any other religious tradition. Nor in Christianity, neither in Christianity, nor in Islam, Muslim religion, nor in any other religious tradition, there is this fine discrimination between the sin and aparadha, offense. And we have to very clearly and very meticulously understand this particular topic. Because the first story of Ajamil is showing sinful wretch, who is so sinful, so sinful, so sinful that one cannot even describe all kinds of sinful activities he has created. And all these sinful activities were burned in a split second by the mere shadow of the holy name. And if somebody doesn't believe in this, he's an offender. He commits aparadha. But it's a fact, because the holy scriptures again and again proclaim the glory of the holy name, and the holy name is capable of destroying sinful activities, because sinful activities does not really touch the soul. They only touch body and mind. And mere shadow of bhakti can burn it. I think Baladeva Vidyabhusana says that as much as cotton, if you just touch cotton with the fire, the cotton will just burst in flame and it will be burned to ashes. In the same way, sinful activities are very easily destroyed. But aparadhas are not destroyed. And there is a distinction between sinful activity and aparadha, which we have to clearly understand what is the difference between this and that. Basically, it's the same kind of activity. What is the difference between Arjamil and Daksha? Here we see Daksha committing serious aparadha against Narada Muni. And who is Daksha? In the previous chapter, it was described that Daksha was a great devotee. You know, this Hamsa Guhya prayers, you know, he has a lot of understanding about the nature of God, about the nature of this material world, about the different things, about the soul, you know. There's very philosophical prayers he is offering. So much so that the Lord himself is forced to come, appear in front of him, and fulfill his desire. This is great. Great, great, great soul, you know, praying to the Lord. We also pray to the Lord. He doesn't appear in front of us with eight arms, you know. He doesn't fulfill our desires either, luckily for us. So, but in case of Daksha, he did come. In case of Daksha, he did fulfill all his desires. But in this particular comparison between the two stories which follow one another in Srimad Bhagavatam, we see and that Ajamil is a good guy and Daksha is a bad guy. Because Ajamil is simply sinful. And sin is not a bad thing. Sin is, air is human. We're all human beings. It happens sometimes. We can sin. But aparadha is a very bad thing. And even in a great devotee as Daksha, it can destroy him completely, totally. You know, we see this wretch Ajamil, and we see great devotee Daksha. And wretch Ajamil is saved, and great devotee Daksha is cursed. Because of his offensive attitude. Because of the offenses which are deeply rooted within his heart. The difference is that sin, again, doesn't touch the soul. But offense is rooted within the soul, within the heart or within the consciousness of the human being. And the difference between sin and offense is that when you commit sinful activity, and we have to understand very clearly about this, when we, in a way, innocently commit sinful activity, you know, we're not really guilty. Like sometimes, recently somebody asked me about his mother. His mother eats meat. It's natural for many mothers in this world. Usually they do it. And he's a neophyte devotee, he's a new devotee. And he's an anxiety, complete anxiety. He loves his mother, and the mother doesn't want to change her habits. And he started asking devotees, what will happen with my mother? And every one of the devotees would tell him, you know, she will go to hell. You don't have to worry. It's already decided. There is no doubt about it. He became more and more desperate about it. And he came to me and he asked me the same question. I said, and he said, my mother is a good woman. She's really good. She has good heart. She's a very chaste woman. She's very kind-hearted. She, you know, she's very hospitable. She invites all the guests. She's taking care. She doesn't care about herself. She cares more about all other people. She's really, you know, really, you know, chaste, almost Vedic woman. But unfortunately, she eats meat. What will happen with her? I said, it's no problem. Don't worry about this. It's not a bit. It's not a bad thing. It's not that she goes to hell. No, it's not true. Because, yes, this is sinful activity, but if she is innocent, and if she is simple-hearted, this simple activity can be very easily destroyed. It's no problem. You know, just take a few drops of Charinamrita at the last moment of your life. It's no problem. All the sins will be destroyed. She will not go to hell. He was so happy about this. And we can see these examples in Puranas again and again and again. The same examples in Puranas are being given, the same stories about mouse, you know, which went to heaven, about the, you know, which actually meant to illustrate this point about the power of bhakti. There was this one story in the Purana. As few people came to the temple. The temple was broken down and it was abandoned. It was an old building, you know, nobody served the Lord, but still somehow the image of the Lord was still there. And these guys were drunkards. They went to jungle somehow or other on excursion, they drank, and they became totally drunk and they saw this temple and they entered this temple and they had some sticks in their heads. And because they were drunk, they started dancing in front of the deities, and they were just, you know, playing with the sticks, making these round sticks. And the Lord said that they're offering charity to me for a long time. Nobody offered any charity to me. These guys are great. They were saved, even though they were drunk. They didn't really mean it. It was not an expression of their devotion. It was just kind of semblance of devotion. But the point is that even semblance of devotion is accepted by the Lord. Because the Lord is so simple-hearted. If it is offered with the simple heart, if there is no offense behind it, if there is no crooked calculation behind it. So many other stories are like this, you know, the story about past life of Prahlad Maharaj, who was fasting by chance on Narasimha Chaturdashi. By chance he was fasting, not because he knew that this Narasimha Chaturdashi. He was a debauchee. He just had a big quarrel with his girlfriend, and the girlfriend was a prostitute, and because the girlfriend was offended and left him, you know, he started fasting because the girlfriend was offended, and he became Prahlad Maharaj in his next life because he was fasting on the right day. All these stories are of the same purport. The purport of these stories is that bhakti is extremely, extremely powerful, but but. There is one big but. It only manifests its power when one is not crooked in the heart, when one is not offensive in the heart, when one is straightforward and simple-hearted. Then the full power of bhakti is manifested. Like also Srila Rupa Goswami in his Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, while describing sadhana bhakti, 64 angas of sadhana bhakti, at the very end of the list, he describes the five angas, five most powerful angas of devotional service, which is reading of Srimad Bhagavatam, chanting the holy name, associating with the holy devotee, residing in the holy dham and worshipping the deity with shraddha, with faith. And he says this is the most powerful panchanga bhakti, the bhakti of these five angas, five processes of devotional service. And then he says, I cannot describe the power of these processes. He says the power of these processes is so huge. He says, sraddha durestu. He says that simple association with these processes, association with the holy name, association with the holy devotee, because all these things which are listed here, like holy dham, or Srimad Bhagavatam, or holy name, or pure devotee of the Lord, or murti, these are the agents of the Lord in this world. These are the deposits of spiritual energy in this world. These are the ways for us to contact the spiritual energy of the Supreme Lord. We can only encounter spiritual energy in this world through these agents. This is Srimad Bhagavatam. And Srimad Bhagavatam is the complete spiritual manifestation of the Supreme Lord. This is the holy name, this is the holy dham, and this is the pure devotee of the Lord, and this is the Archa Vigraha, or Murti of the Lord. This is how we can encounter the Supreme Lord, or how we can experience the effect of the spiritual energy upon our consciousness. And Srila Rupa Goswami says, Shraddha Dureyastu. Any association with these five things can bring us very far away from Shraddha. Far away means much further than Shraddha. They don't give just Shraddha, they give us much higher experiences in bhakti, including bhava. You know, if somebody is associating with the image of the Lord, or with the holy name, or with the holy dham, he can experience bhava practically immediately. Or even Srimad Bhagavatam, or of course the pure devotee of the Lord. Like somebody told me a story about one German devotee went to Vrindavan. And Vrindavan is a holy dham. It's a powerful place in this world. And he met with one in an Olo Bazaar. This is a main place of pilgrimage of all the devotees in Vrindavan. They all go to Olo Bazaar. So on the Olo Bazaar, he met one strange looking guy, you know, like tourist. And he was an elderly man, and he was German. So he started speaking with him. He wanted to know how come he came to Vrindavan, why he's coming to Vrindavan. And he said, I'm a well-to-do person. I have a lot of money and I'm retired. And when I retired from my job, I started traveling. And I went to many, many countries. And, you know, it was kind of boring everywhere the same. And then, by any chance, I came to India. And then, you know, it's a filthy place. And then somebody told me that there is this place, Vrindavan. And I came to Vrindavan. And ever since, I can't stay away from Vrindavan. I come there every year. Because there is something special with this place. I don't know what it is. It's not like any other place. It makes my heart beat. This is the power of the holy place. And this is the illustration of this particular point of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, that any encounter with these five things, if somebody is innocent, because this is basically the condition which Srila Rupa Goswami makes while describing this Panchanga Bhakti. He says, if somebody is Saddhi, Srila Jiva Goswami explaining this verse in his commentary to Bhakti Rasamrita Simpli, he says, Saddhi means somebody who is offenseless, who doesn't have offenses. So basically, Srila Rupa Goswami says that if somebody is not offensive, then he immediately can experience the power of these things, up to the level of bhava. Practically, immediately he can experience some bhava. You know, he hears the holy name. Also, there is one story in Moscow. There was one lady, and she joined. How did she join? She met the Harinam party, and she stood, being a little curious. You know, she was eating some bread or something like this, or maybe potato. I don't know what they eat on the streets. Maybe potato chips. And she was there, you know, and she was listening, and she started dancing, you know, in the rhythm. And then she said, then I started crying. And I didn't know why I'm crying. And then I was crying more and more and more. And while the Harinam party was going further, I started falling because I was crying and I couldn't just, you know, part with this experience. That was the most blissful experience. And then she came with the Harinam party to the temple, and then she dressed in sari and she said, yeah, I'm staying now here with you. So this is again how the power, how the holy name can act upon somebody who is innocent. And that's what Srila Rupa Goswami says, and Srila Jiva Goswami explains, that if somebody is offenseless in the heart, then immediately he can experience this power. But if somebody is offensive, and this is... when should I stop? Give attention to class.
Nine.
Huh? Nine, it's already nine. Should I stop now? Okay, I'll tell you a few more things. It's again, I said it's a big topic. I cannot address this topic. I basically didn't explain what is the difference between sin and aparata yet. If somebody has this aparata or offensive mentality, and then he will not experience this. He will not experience the power of the holy name or the power of the servant deities or the power of association with the pure devotee. And we can see it in the example of Daksha. Basically, this whole thing not about Hariyashvas and Shavalashvas. It's the whole story is about the very last scene of the story. When Narada Muni, after liberating Hariyashvas and Shavalashvas, thinks, you know, I have to liberate their father too. Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, actually commenting on this story, he says that Narada Muni was thinking, I am the family priest of these guys. You know, why did he come to Hariyashvas and Shavalashvas? Because he was the family priest. He was helping King Prachinabarhi, he was helping Prachetas, he was helping generations after generations to all these devotees. This is the lineage of devotees, of great devotees. And Narada Muni was always there to help them. Therefore he came to Hariyashvas, therefore he helped, and he came to Shavalashvas. And then finally he knew that Daksha is not a very good person, but he still thought, let me liberate him. He could not liberate Daksha. On the contrary, the effect was totally opposite. Daksha, when he saw Narada Muni, who came with the best intention in the world to help him, cursed him. He started screaming at him, and you know, he started really, you know, he was so angry. And because of this, he was basically condemned. So this is the whole point of this story, that Narada Muni, even though he's a pure devotee, even though he's the most powerful representative of God, he couldn't do anything with Daksha, because Daksha was too sinful and too offensive. So the offense is, despite the fact that Daksha is supposedly a great spiritual personality who offers prayers to the Lord. So the difference between sin and aparat is very significant in this regard. The difference between sin and aparat is that aparat is the activity in which you do in relationship to the Supreme Lord. It's basically the sinful activity which you do in relationship to the Supreme Lord. If you do sinful activities on its own, it's not so bad. But if you do sinful activity in relationship to the Supreme Lord, being related, being connected with the Supreme Lord, this constitutes aparat. And the consequences of this are very severe. And that you can very clearly understand. Because, see, if somebody is not related to you, if somebody is really, you don't know him, for the first time you see him, and he says something nasty to you, you meet somebody on the street and he screams at you, and you look at him, and you're not really offended. But if somebody is close to you, and the closer he is, the more severe the offense becomes. If somebody who is close to you says something even little against you, you become so deeply pained. Why? Because of the nature of this relationship. So basically, the definition of aparada is aradyate iti rada. Aradyate iti rada is if somebody serves the Lord, this very nature of service is called rada or love. When we serve, service and love are synonymous. You know, if somebody is serving, this is the expression of love, and this is called rada. The word rada, the very word rada, is from this aradyate, aradha, dhatu, verbal root dhatu, which means serve. Somebody who serves. And then, you know, the love comes to your heart, the love purifies your heart, the love melts your heart if you serve the Lord. But apagatarada iti aparada. The etymology of the word aparada, apagatarada. Apagata means something which drives away radha, something which drives away the very spirit of service. Or something which drives away the joy of love. Because Radha is the manifestation of figure of love. You know, basically aparada, something which is totally opposite or contrary to the service spirit which we have. And if we are in connection with the Supreme Lord, if this connection is already established, if some relationship is already there by the dint of our service, and then we do something which is totally opposite to this spirit of service, this is called aparada, apagatarada. This is something which drives away love or this sentiment from our heart. And the consequences of this are very severe. And this story is here to illustrate that this is the only thing which can destroy bhakti within our heart. And we can see around us, we can see so many stories which can confirm this particular point, that if you're just simple, then you can remain blissful by chanting the holy name. But if this offensive mentality somehow or other sneaks in, somehow or other, you know, crawls in your heart, then it immediately destroys the joy of bhakti. And this is very sad. And while describing this point, or explaining this point, Srila Jiva Goswami in Bhaktisandarbha, he quotes the verse, which is also there in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. This is the verse from Padma Purana, Parada Bhajana story, where it is said, Dehadravina janata lobha pasandamadhyaya. In this verse it is explained the nature of the or the root cause of offenses. How the offenses come to our heart, and what we should be careful about. What is the reason why offenses come to our heart? And it's said very specifically there, which will be the last point which I will make. I don't want to go too long all the time. Specifically, it is said there, Deha, Dravina, Janata, Loba. Loba means greed. Loba means this mentality that I want more and more. What I want more? I want more three things. Deha. Deha means body, and Deha means basically the bodily pleasures. The pleasures which are brought about by matter, by my contact with matter. If this greed for bodily pleasures is there, if it's not really understood clearly that this greed is useless, that it's bad, that this is a cause of pashanda. Pashanda means aparata. Pashanda means being like pashu. Pashu means animal. You become like an animal. Deha dravina. Dravina means money. Dravina means also money which I illegally achieved. Dravina also means power, because money gives power. Money, there is another greed which is there. We have greed for material enjoyment, which is, you know, we don't have to go into details about this lamentable condition of a human being. But we also have greed for power, because we are insecure and we think that, you know, if by hook and by crook I have to somehow or other achieve some powerful position when I can feel more secure. Sachinanda Maharaj told me that this is actually the development of the Austrian school of psychology. First, Sigmund Freud came and he says, you know, the sex is the main driving force. And then Adler comes and Adler says, no, the strife for power is much more powerful driving force behind our life. Anyway, the same consequence is there. Deha dravina. Dravina means the lobha or greed for power, or for money, or for security, for whatever. Even if it's illegally achieved. Deha dravina janata. And janata means, phew, this is the most dangerous. Janata means the greed for the followers. The greed for the worship, the greed for honor, respect, all this kind of stuff. And Srila Rupa Goswami basically says that if these three things are very deeply rooted within our heart, and if we don't understand how destructive these things are, don't become careful about the degrading or destructive power of these things, then for sure we will commit aparatas. And aparatas will make us crooked in our heart. Srila Jiva Goswami explains the effects of aparata of offenses. And the first effect is the crookedness of the heart. You become calculating. And you even worship the Lord. Srila Jiva Goswami gives an example of Duryodhana, who was worshipping the Lord. The Duryodhana, when Lord Krishna came to Hastinapur, Duryodhana made such a reception, you know. Phew. Nobody was received as Lord Krishna in Hastinapur, you know. There was red carpets everywhere, the best accommodations, the best food, the best dancing girls, because Duryodhana was calculating what Krishna wants, what Krishna loves. You know, he's a devotee. He's thinking what Krishna would like to have. You know, he loves girls, so let us bring him girls, and he loves opulent food, let us bring the best cooks and everything. You know, why? And when Krishna came, you know, he looked at this and he said, I will go to eat the banana peels in the house of Vidura. I don't need your opulent food, I don't need your dancing girls, I don't need these carpets, I don't need anything. I don't accept anything from you because you're crooked in the heart. You're offering it to me, but you're calculating what will I get in return, how I will get it. This is what Śrīla Jīva Gosvāmī explains is the effect of the aparādhā, offenses. And he says, if somebody is worshipping the Lord, but he is offensive towards Guru, towards Vaishnavas, and towards the Vedas, this is the manifestation of his crooked heart. Because if you are to worship the Lord, you have to understand that Vedas and Vaishnavas and the spiritual master are his representatives. And they should be as much worshipable as the Lord himself. Anyways, that's a few points. I really don't want to. I don't like to give long classes. And maybe tomorrow we can speak a little more on this topic. But it is a very important topic because despite the fact that bhakti is very powerful, it can be totally destroyed because of the offenses. And we have to really know what is offense and how to avoid offense and how to conduct bhakti in a proper manner, so that the full manifestation of the power of bhakti will bless us by the most elevated state of consciousness, which is love. Okay, thank you very much. Is there any questions?
I heard once in a lecture that many followers of Srila Prabhupada are going to the heavenly planets.
Ah, good question. I think even Srila Prabhupada himself said this. I think this is an authoritative statement that many followers of Srila Prabhupada will go to heavenly planets. Why? Because they want it. Because we perform bhakti with a specific desire. Like Daksha, he was performing bhakti in a very powerful manner. He was offering the prayers and the Lord himself came. And the Lord didn't even ask what he wants, because he knew what he wants. He wanted the big sexual power. He wanted to become the most powerful sexual hero in the world. And his sexual power is amazing, you know. He can beget 10,000 people at once. This is something really remarkable in the history of humanity. So, if you want this, you will get it through the power of bhakti. Like, there is bhuktinam, there is muktinam, and there is bhaktinam. This harinam is powerful, and in Padma Purana it is said, nama chintamani krishna chaitanya rasa vigraha. Nama is chintamani. Chintamani means touchstone. And it means it can fulfill any desire. And there are three kinds of desires. Characteristically, there are only three types of desire. Therefore, you can chant the holy name with the intention to get the material enjoyment, and this will be called bhuktinam. You call Krishna, 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 but, you know, Krishna knows what you mean. Hare dollar, hare dollar, 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 hare hare. Hare euro, hare euro, euro, euro. This is bhuktinam. And then there is muktinam, you chant the holy name with the desire to get rid of your sufferings in this material world. You're fed up and you want to get out of here. And this is muktinam. And this is a very powerful motivation within our heart. It's not so easy to clear these motivations, even though theoretically we may understand that this is not the best. And basically this is an offense. Because also Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, in his commentaries to this story about Daksha, to this particular chapter, he says Daksha became very opulent. In his past life he was opulent, and he was performing all the sacrifices. He ended up with the goat head. Don't mix with goat head. He had a goat's head. Which is very humiliating, especially if you're into sex life, you know. All of a sudden you have a head of the goat. But the next life, he also was born in a very highly elevated family, in a very opulent family too. And Vishwanath Chakravarti says that one of the results of aparada is the material opulence. Sometimes people, I heard this, and in ISKCON it was also sometimes prevalent, that if somebody is a pure devotee, then the opulence will, you know, will come to him for sure. Not necessarily. Maybe. In case of Srila Prabhupada, it did come. And Prabhupada did say himself that if the Lord trusts the devotee, that he will not misuse the opulence, he will bring the opulence. But opulence can also come through another channel. And it also comes through the channel of aparada. Vishwanath Chakravarti says it may be, it's not necessarily a result or the proof of the purity of your devotion. It may also be a result of the offensive practice of your bhakti. And therefore this can be a result of so-called bhakti. So much for this. Yes? Anything?
You mentioned two Austrian schools of psychology.
Yes.
There are three.
Yeah, the third one is good.
It's the meaning
Viktor Frankl,
the search for God.
That's a very natural progression. And there are three, all, right in their own right, so to speak. There's Viktor Frankl, he was the third one who said that the meaning of life is much more powerful drive. That's a fact. We can see that if somebody is driven by this, he can neglect the, you know, drive for power and drive for material enjoyment. Thank you.
I would like to ask in connection to Bhakti Sarupananda Maharaj's service, since you perhaps are also from this branch.
I'm not exactly. I was never serving him, but
we know that maybe since 10 or 20 years there is definitely proof that the theory of Darwin is a fake. It's untrue, and still it is propagated as the truth in universities, which means, or which must mean, that it is achieved.
It's a fraud.
That it is achieved in humanity.
Yeah, it's a fraud.
So what is the chance that this will change?
This is the world of cheaters and those who want to be cheated. even Darwin himself, oh no, not Darwin himself, but somebody who was his follower, in the very beginning, recently it was proved that in all the handbooks on Darwin theory, there is this neat kind of proof of Darwin's theory that the embryo was in the womb. Goes from one stage to another. In one stage it develops some kind of, you know, how you call this stuff when you breathe through, like the fishes, not through the nostrils, but through this. You know, and there is this elaborate kind of stuff. You know, the embryo goes through all the stages of evolution. And you can see this. It means that, you know, all this evolution is there genetically. There. And recently, and it was discovered that this is a total fake. The one of ardent followers of Darwin, who was so inspired by this beautiful theory, you know, he just faked it through his, you know, embryological so-called things. But people still believe it because they want to believe it. Actually, Huxley, who was the main propagator of Darwin's theory, who was basically the person who made the Darwin theory popular, he very clearly says in his letters that I want to propagate the theory to relieve people from the prejudice regarding the sex life. He was the liberator of the human society. He wanted to make them free from all this guilt complexes which are naturally there because of the church, and church, you know, viciously somehow or other made people guilty, and they cannot, you know, enjoy sex life like monkeys. And therefore the Dharma seal is very good, because it said, you're a monkey, you know, why don't you do the same as monkeys without any guilt problems? So he was very clear, his intention is very clear. He says this, this is my purpose, this is why I want to propagate. And because this kind of people will always be there, will want to give to the humanity this blessing of free sex life, the Dharma theory will always be propagated or taught in schools, or they will always be, especially in Kali Yuga. If not Darwin, they will make some other arguments of fake things. It's amazing, it's unbelievable. Actually, I became a devotee. One of the reasons why I became a devotee, because I was totally, I just couldn't take it seriously anymore, the evolution theory on the molecular level. I was a molecular biologist, and I was studying the molecular biology, and I could clearly see that this is ridiculous, what they say, because they couldn't figure out how this DNA and proteins, how they work together, because it's such a complex thing. And then they say, oh, somehow or other, it just appeared, it's by chance. You know, everything is by chance. Which is the theory of demons, described very nicely in the 16th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. So, it will always be there, don't worry. This is Kali Yuga. The Kali Yuga is the age of hypocrisy. The hypocrisy will prevail. And we can see there are newer and newer means of hypocrisy. The internet, all this propaganda, mass propaganda, is just to brainwash people with the TV and everything. It's just for one purpose, to make Kali rule over this world, over the hearts of the people. Okay, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki Gaur Vimanandi Bhakti Swarup Damodar Goswami ki Jai.